Hi, everybody. I'm John Semper, the creator of Spider-Man, the Animated Series, and you are listening to the Spider-Man, the Animated Series podcast.
Hello, webheads, and welcome to another edition of Spider-Man, the Animated Series podcast. I'm your host, Alex Robson, and with me, as always, is my co-host, my brother, comic book artist and writer, and all-around friendly neighborhood guy. It's Mr. Will Robson. Say hello, Will.
Hello, everybody.
We're back.
From outer space. We spent so many nights thinking that we stopped doing the pod, and you weren't wrong. We nearly laid it down to die, but no, not I. The podcast will survive.
That was very good. That was off the cuff, not rehearsed or anything. That was good.
Well, thank you.
It's been a while since I did that intro. It's been a while since we've been on the pod, but it's really nice. And of course, we had to come back because we've got a very special guest on the show today, don't we?
Yes, we do.
As you undoubtedly heard at the start of this episode, our special guest today is Mr. John Semper Jr., which is just amazing. Long time coming. We've been on and off talking since I pretty much started the podcast and reaching out to people. He was my number one guest. And the timing's lined up and it couldn't have been better. So we will definitely get to part one of our two-parter interview. That's right. We spoke to John for such a length of time and it was such a great interview that we can't cram it all into one episode. So we've got two parts, you guys. One now and then the second part coming in the next episode.
Well, we could cut it into 52 parts, release one a week, and then we could just take the rest of the year off. Like 10-minute segments and then be like, bye.
Yeah, just jump in like, so when I did Spider-Man the Animated Series, and that's
tune
the end
in next week.
Oh, man. So as always, let me dust off the cobwebs here and start with the art life. How is the art and writer life going for you?
It's certainly picked up a little bit. I finished my first ever DC Comics project, DC Earth Prime issue 6, which is a tie-in into all of the CW shows. It's a major crossover of all the characters from those shows, like 20 years in the future, all fighting a villain, multiple villains. My God, I've drawn probably 60 or 70 different characters in this book. It was a lot of work. It took me half a year to draw 30 pages of a comic because it was just like, this guy's punching this guy and he's fighting 10 of these things and it's in this particular location. And yeah, so luckily DC was like, we'll give you a bit of breathing room to get this done. That comes out June 21st, Earth Prime issue 6, drawn by me. It's my first ever DC Comics appearance. So
exciting.
Could be collectible one day.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Especially in Dubai where you're super famous.
Yes, I'm now big in Dubai.
Explain, because we've obviously been gone from the pods since Spider-Man No Way Home came out, which was obviously 6 months ago now, or 5 months ago. So, yeah, what has happened with you and how busy have you been?
I've been very busy. I'm also, so currently, I have another DC project lined up, which I can't talk about, but it's pretty cool.
Makes me horny.
All right.
There was just, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's pretty killer.
Oh, you're throwing people off the scent there.
Yeah. Well, that's about
I get it. I get it. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I almost just said it blatantly, but I can't do that.
No, you can't.
I can't do that. I do not want to get fired from this project. I
believe the last time we did a podcast, you were talking about being cancelled and worried about being cancelled. So, yeah, yes. Let's not get you fired from DC now.
So, yeah, I'm doing a single issue book currently. It's about to start for DC where I'm just doing the art, which I'm excited about. But at the same time, I got offered a small gig with Marvel that I'll be doing at the same time with another very big character, you know, the type of character that just drives you up the wall.
Oh, these inside jokes are amazing. Sorry, everyone, if it's annoying you, but it all makes sense one day.
Yeah, it makes sense one day. So I'm going to do the two big characters at the same time. And then on top of that, I've also landed another gig opportunity that I'm really excited about, where I'm writing and drawing one of my favorite properties of all time. And
why were you going to say for this?
I want to do a very, very not on the nose pun for this one.
Sure.
You'll be jonesing for it when it comes out. I don't know.
Okay.
That's low enough. That's low enough.
Okay. Yeah, I like it.
That's fine. So, So a lot of that stuff going on. I also have a creator-owned book of story that I've written that with this particular company has now reached a new stage, which is great. But that book probably won't be out for a couple of years, which is crazy. So
that's nuts.
In a couple of years, I'll be like, oh yeah, by the way, I made this. Read
Especially
it.
Because how quickly you had to turn all of that around, right? And it's just like, it was crazy for you. And, you know, I spoke to you during that time and obviously you were so busy. And then once it finally made it through the door, then it's just like, yeah, a couple of years. Like, what?
Yeah, it's with publishing and scheduling of books and all this crazy stuff that I'm just not used to. Like, for instance, like when you work on, you know, properties from companies, it moves fast, almost too fast, especially at certain particular companies where you're like, I need a break to like sort this out. Like, for instance, when I did Vampirella with Dynamite, it was like, all right, what do you want to do? I'm like, I want to do this. Great. Where's the script? Here's the script. Great, make it. And I was like, oh, all right, let's do it. Which I really like that process because it's creative freedom. But with if it's not a licensed property, then it's a completely different ballgame.
Yeah, that's
because you got to wait for artists to be available. You got to wait for your book to make sense in the release scheduling. This, that, and the other. There's so many different types of things. So yeah, when I was told like, so we're looking at a release window of like 2024, 2025. I'm like, I'll be in my mid-30s then, but all right, let's do it.
And a previous guest of the podcast was someone that helped you with all of this, correct?
Yes, I will say a previous guest of the podcast is someone that I am working with on that project.
Sure. Yes. And then also you just found out about another Marvel book right before the pod.
Oh, yeah, just literally before we started recording, they announced Damage Control, which is a book that I drew the first two issues of years ago, back in 2019. But then when it went into 2020, the pandemic hit, and if you guys remember, Marvel shut its doors. So we stopped that for a while, and then I picked it up, but I was already, you know, working on Dynamite projects, and my schedule just couldn't fit everything in. So it was the first time I've had to back out of a project, especially, you know, for Marvel, which is, you know, a huge company, to be like, I'm sorry, I can't do this. It was really hard for me to do that. Like, it was really hard to be like, because I felt like I was not holding up my end of the bargain. But I mean, times change. You know, we were 8 months into the future during a pandemic and I had to find work elsewhere. So that's just, you know, the way she goes. So, yeah, I drew the first two issues. It's written by the guys who created the Goldberg TV show, the Goldbergs.
That's Goldbergs, yeah.
And it's kind of, they said it's like a Damage Control. It's kind of like, you know, the Marvel Universe, but in the sense of The Office.
TV show, The Office, right?
Yeah. So it's a comedy book. So if you like my older art where it's, you know, a bit more clean and silly, that's what you'll be getting from that. Nowadays, I'm a lot more rugged and rough. I like to use dry brushes to create tone and stuff like that.
Right. You've been very busy. So I'm glad that we can give everyone an update and bring on all the
things
work
going on. Other things that I can't even talk about.
Yeah, I know. It's and I'm like, how about, wait, no, I can't talk about that. How about, wait, no, I can't talk about that. But what we can talk about and what we haven't done in a very long time, are you ready for some Kingpin and Smythe?
I don't know, I'm a bit out of practice there, Smythe. I've been locked in a cupboard for months. like the guy in the Harry Potter movie where he's in a trunk all the way at the bottom. It's just me down there with empty crisp and chocolate wrappers.
Mad Eye, but you would just, yeah, you would just have like stains of chocolate all over your mouth.
Someone called me Mad Eye Moobie and I did not appreciate it, Spice.
Mad Eye Boobies. All right, let's do this thing.
You've botched another important operation, Smythe. You will do as you are told. My name is Alistair Smythe. It seems the new Alistair is just as disappointing as the old.
A crime lord known as the Kingpin.
As you should know, Smythe, in spite of my size, I have the agility of a cat. It is time for me to cut my losses and make a change.
Okay, this episode's Kingpin and Smythe scenario has been written in by Becky Farris. Becky has said, Kingpin discovers that Spider-Man got his powers by being bitten by a radioactive spider. He enlists Smythe to turn on an animal radioactive and bite him. What animal insect does he choose to be bitten by, and what could possibly go wrong?
Okay, I love this scenario. So
yeah, this is a fun one. Okay, obviously, we'll assume roles. I sometimes go into Kingpin, but let's just say you can be Kingpin. I'll be Smythe for this, all right?
Okay, all right. Sir, I miss doing this. What? Doing me? No, I mean, just, you know, coming up with capers and plans, and I've just discovered something, sir. Spider-Man, you know, our greatest enemy, he is...
Yes, I'm well aware who Spider-Man is, Smythe. God's sake. Sorry, stupid sir. Question.
It's just been a while, sorry. And he apparently has all of his amazing abilities.
Amazing, you say?
Abilities, sorry. He's gone on all of them by being bitten by a radioactive spider, sir. And the best part is that I have the technology to do this.
Oh, so what you're insinuating is that I could have the power of any animal that I could think would be the best animal for me to have powers of. Is that what you're saying?
It's been such a long time since we did this.
So you're telling me that there's a chance that I too could have the superpowers of fill in the blank here animal. Is that right, Smythe?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Well, we know I already have the agility of a cat. But I don't want to be, you know, curling up in your lap, Smythe, and, you know, pooing in a little box.
I wouldn't feel it, sir.
Oh, that's very sad, Smythe. Sorry to bring that up. Let's see here. Now, I'm quite brawny, aren't I? Smythe?
Your brawny makes me horny, sir, yes.
Oh, that should be a t-shirt, Smythe. Let's see here.
He's like, forget this plan, let's go make a t-shirt. Oh, shit. Okay, so, all right, let's side panel this and think about what animal does Kingpin want to be bitten by and gain its abilities, but then is there a possibility that Smythe maybe mishears what he says and gives him the...
No, I think he should get what he wants.
Yeah? Okay. I mean, you could do, like, you could try and go the spider route and, like, think about predators of a spider. So you've got, like, birds. He could be like a giant fat bird that can't...
A pigeon, Smythe.
A pigeon, yeah.
Look, they carry messages from long distances. They're very intelligent. They're very cute. They're bald. And
they're bald.
Big puffy chests.
Their poo is white like my jacket.
Yes, yes. Oh, and they look like they have a crevasse as well.
Yeah.
The purple. Yes. I shall have the powers of a Pidgey, Smythe.
No harming pigeons, sir. We're not allowed.
And you will call me King Pidgey. Go on, set it up.
Oh, I'm loving this nickname, sir. Okay. Click, 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 tick, 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 switch, switch, switch. And okay.
Right. You're literally just waving your hands in the air, making noises. I know that's not how it works.
That's how science
works.
You
must take this seriously.
Sir, that's how science works.
Maybe I should have called Dr. Octopus for this one.
Don't you get Dr. Landon in here. I can't stand that two-faced, ugly side piece that you have.
All right, so he gets radioactive.
We all have our kinks, Smythe. We all have our kinks.
Now, I'm thinking that instead of being bitten by a pigeon... All right, ready? Okay, I'll do this as Smythe.
Sir, there's a little bit of a snaggy-poo in how you're going to gain the pigeon's powers. Pigeons can't really bite and transfer that.
You can peck me.
No, I've tested it, sir. It didn't work. So what they can do, sir, is
the way they feed their babies is they regurgitate into their mouths. So, so sir, the way you're going to become King Pidgey is by having this pigeon be sick on your tongue.
So I have to dress up as a baby pigeon in a nest. I see there's a giant nest in the corner. Yes, and I see the costume that I think is way too big and over-exaggerated for my actual stature.
So I don't know what's going to happen during the transformation process.
Transformation process. I'm not actually going to look like a pigeon, am I?
Well, Spider-Man became a man spider at one point, so I thought just in case we might have to prepare for you to be a giant actual pigeon.
This is sounding like quite a bad idea. Is there an is there an antidote for this, Mythe?
I haven't gotten that far, no, sir. You ready?
Are you sure you don't want to be like a centipede with multiple legs or something, Spider? We'll try it out on you first.
No, sir. I watched that movie, The Human Centipede, and it really put me off that idea.
I didn't catch that one, but I got the memo from, you know, from what people told me. Pretty fucked up. Yes,
there was heads and buttholes, anyway, sir.
It turns out that the costume is a bit small, Smythe, but I'll make do with it.
See him, like his bulge is coming out the bottom. Look, of it.
We've been on a break, Smythe. I haven't done much. I'm not going to lie. Have you tried those new Thai chili sensations? They have a new flavor, which is what is it? Worcestershire sauce? Oh fuck me! I don't know. Teriyaki flavored. They're good.
I haven't tried them yet, sir. I'll be sure to have them after this experiment.
I got them randomly, Smythe, and I thought, I'm not going to like these. And I took a bite, and then the whole bag was gone. So there you go. That's what I think of them.
All right, so here comes the pigeon, yeah? Smythe brings the pigeon in, and you're going to be... So
mummy! Mummy! I'm hungry, mummy.
I'm sorry, listeners. I wish this was, if this was a video podcast, just seeing my brother bounce around like a baby bird right now.
Mummy. Baby hungry, mummy.
Ah. Ooh,
ooh, oh, yeah. Hip, 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 hip.
So you're scaring it away. Oh,
mummy, hungry.
Okay.
Yeah. You're fucking disgusting. You have to swallow it, sir. That's what you said. I can feel it. I can feel it tingling all over me, Spider.
What's happening?
Oh, I found my chest is billowing out, Spider.
This is the most ridiculous scenario we've ever done.
I think I can fly, Smythe. We are!
Oh, I think we should just stop there, man. Let's put a stop to that before it gets even more out of hand. That's just insane.
Pidgey lives.
Just imagine seeing his silhouette like on a building. It's just this gigantic pigeon.
The King Pidgeon.
Oh, God. That was brilliant. Well,
I will take a pluck out of crime.
Thank you, Becky, because that was jokes.
King
Pidgeon. Oh, man. So
the King Pidgeon will check what's in the fridge.
And then regurgitate it into your mouth.
Smythe, would you like some of my crisps? Oh, sure. So,
oh, God. All right. Well, if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to come. Please be sure to come visit us on Instagram and Twitter, maybe Facebook by the time this comes up. I've tried doing Facebook again, guys, and it just doesn't like us. I don't know why. It always
my brother is now reached the age where technology does not work for him anymore.
Nope, I hate Zoom. I've been trying to figure out some microphones for my YouTube show, and I finally did, but it took me 2 hours and I can't fucking record.
Plug your YouTube show.
Well, I'll plug this podcast and then I'll be sure to do that. So
all right. Sorry, I didn't realize there was a structure to this.
Yeah, we've only been done this for like 4 years and you're like, oh, there's a structure.
Mommy!
Please be sure to come visit us on Instagram and Twitter by keyword searching @SpidermanTAS pod. So that's Spider-Man TAS Pod everywhere. We keep on trying with Facebook. Maybe it will happen. You can email us or you can message us your Kingpin and Smythe scenarios through socials or at SpidermanTASpodcast@gmail.com. Also be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, as it helps us wall crawl up the charts and attract both new listeners and guests. Real easy. Whatever you listen to us right now, just hit the 5 stars because we're just that good. And leave a comment. I love seeing reviews. It makes me really happy. So keep those reviews coming. Spotify lets you do that now as well. And finally, you can also follow Will on his social media pages to see his artwork, stay up to date what he's working on now, and get a glimpse into the workday of a comic book artist and writer. Will, where can our listeners find you?
Anywhere on the internet at Robson, I-N-K, or just search my name, Will Robson.
That's right. And yes, and then to additionally plug, I have started up a YouTube cooking channel, which has been a lot of fun, where I make fictional characters' favorite foods, or I recreate famous fast food movie tie-in dishes. So if you remember, as kids, we would go to like McDonald's, Burger King, Carl's Jr., and they all had themed burgers or meals that were tied into a movie. So go check that out at Chef Alex Robson. So Chef Alex Robson on YouTube. And I've got about 6 videos going right now. Got another one coming that's Star Wars themed, which is going to be great to tie in with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Hello there.
Hello there. All right, let's get on to some news. First and foremost, I love Predator. You love Predator.
I love the Predator.
Did you see the Predator teaser trailer for the new movie?
No.
Oh, you didn't see it? I sent it to you.
Yeah, I didn't watch it.
Okay, well, it's really cool. I believe it's called Hunt or Hunted or something like that. I could be completely wrong, but Predator's not in the title, but it's the same text as Predator. And it's based in like 1600s or like 1700s in like North America, where it's Native Americans primarily being hunted. And I remember when I heard this idea, I was like, that sounds kind of fun. Wait to see a trailer. The trailer sold me. The teaser, it's all I need to see. It's like a 20-second teaser, and it's really good. It's powerful stuff, and just showed not even the Predator. They just showed the target beam on one of their foreheads, on one of the natives' foreheads, and I was just like, oh, yeah, I'm in. This sounds like a lot of fun, a completely different scenario. In the woods again, I'm like, this could be awesome.
Yeah, I'll have to watch the trailer. I mean, it sounds to me like it makes a good TV show, not maybe a full movie, but we'll see.
Well, you say that. What's interesting is it said coming to Hulu this August, which means...
If it's a show that's just Predator hunting people at different times, then well done. You've made a great Predator show.
I think it's a movie, not a show. That does sound good, though. I like your idea more about different time periods. That would be really cool, actually, to have like each season
past, like, no, each episode, like a Black episode Mirror.
Oh yeah, that's dope. God damn, yeah,
that's what I do. I'm a professional writer, bud. That's what I do, baby. Hire me, motherfuckers.
Yeah, so it's coming out this August, I believe Hulu in America, and then Star on Disney Plus for us.
Stars.
So we don't have to go to the cinema to see it, which then makes me worried that it might not be great because it's not worthy for release in cinemas.
That doesn't mean that's true.
That's true. There's Netflix movies that are really
I don't like going to the cinemas anyway.
That's true. So you'll probably watch it when it comes out.
I did go to like one of those 4K... like big leisure seats to see Doctor Strange in Dubai. And I was like, and I like sat back in my seat like, yes, the comfy experience of going to see a film.
Well, we can talk about it. That's a good segue. Doctor Strange came out. What did you think of Multiverse of Madness?
I went in having zero expectations for it. You had already messaged me saying that you didn't enjoy it very much. So I thought, well, if Wig doesn't like it, then I'm gonna fucking hate it. So I went in like arms crossed, like, right, let's get this over with. And the film started and I was like, okay, this feels extremely cookie cutter superheroes. And I was like, oh, this is going on. And I was like, they're making a lot of choices that I really don't like. like the battle with all of the wizards and witches on the, and the whatever it's called, like the, you know, where they train.
The temple, yeah.
I was like, don't like this. And then I was like, I don't understand why Wanda's like this now. We just had a whole show explaining her character arc, but now we get this. And then, okay, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the movie, I would turn this off now for a little bit and come check in 5 minutes. And then that Illuminati showed up. Now, everyone was like expecting them. I, you know me, I don't watch trailers or anything. So, or I don't like listen to fan stuff. So I had no idea that that was going to happen. So I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. I'd already heard about the Professor X rumor because that was just instantly on the internet, which I was like, fuck you guys. Like,
it's also wasn't.
Get out of my face. Like, it was just on Twitter. I was like, fuck you. Like, and they were like, what? But everyone's talking about it. I'm like, so you're just going to like perpetuate it even more? Go fuck yourself.
But it was in a trailer, bud, which is so unlike Marvel. They're like, here he is. Here's the chair.
Oh, was he?
It was in like trailer number 3 for the movie.
But I could have sworn this was a time like, I remember there was a first teaser out and people were like, that's definitely Professor X. And people were talking about, like, I heard his voice. Yep,
I know
like
which that. One you're talking about. And
that's where I heard it. So I didn't know. I guess they just released a trailer off. So people were like talking.
But
like,
that first trailer, even so, with him being like, let us tell him the truth. It's like, that's so Patrick Stewart.
Okay, so I guess I missed. Okay, I got a little hot there. I'm sorry. And, and I guess I was misguided, misdirected heat. So I apologize. Anyway, so I knew he was coming, but, you know, the fucking John Krasinski fan service of being Mr. Fantastic. I was like, ooh. So that happened. I was like, okay, you've piqued my interest. And then freaking Wanda just starts killing everybody. And, like, Mr. Fantastic being turned into string cheese. I was like, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Peggy Carter getting Darth Mauled. I was like, that is cold and cutthroat. And then everyone else getting messed up. I remember.
Well, I like Black Bolt as well, where it's just like Black Bolt with your Bolt. Mouth. And then she's like, what mouth? Yeah, which is now becoming a meme all over the place with stuff. And then, yeah, just blowing his head
Matrix,
up.
She matrixed him big time.
She did, yeah.
So I was like, that's really cool. And then I remember the people I went to see it with were like, I'm kind of upset that, you know, like they beat Captain Marvel so quickly and like just a building destroyed. I'm like, well, don't you think that maybe she's not dead? Like, maybe she's knocked out. Maybe they purposely were like, we can't just have this character kill what we consider the most powerful character in our universe. So let's just knock her out to get her temporarily out of this fight. I guarantee you that version of Captain Marvel is coming back later on. I guarantee it, 100%. Because everyone else got annihilated. Like, everyone else got killed, murdered. Mm. Patrick Stewart's neck was snapped. Yeah. Like, people died.
It's people messed up. Died. So apparently, the rumor is, or like the speculation is that Professor Xavier, obviously he's in the animated series Yellow Chair, the theme tune played when he showed up, so you're like, is that the animated series version? And then earlier in the movie they go through, Doctor Strange and America Chavez go through a bunch of different universes, and one of them was a cartoon. He's like, we a cartoon in that universe? So it is speculated that Professor Xavier is from that cartoon universe, which is the X-Men.
I never assumed he was the one from the X-Men films. I never assumed that.
No, but what we don't know is he definitely the animated series one, or is he like a sort of ode to the animated series without being that one? But apparently he is that one.
All signs would point to that he's that one.
Right? So the way that the animated series Professor X dies is he gets his fucking neck snapped.
I think it's also everyone. I know people weren't happy with it, but it's like why I liked the first Endgame movie where everyone disappeared and Thanos won. I was like, let's end the franchise here, because that, what a bold move that would be, right? Just to be like, and he was successful, and half the people are dead, and the universe is a much better place. Good night, everybody. And be like, what the? I like bold joy. I like, as I said, I had a big review discussion with people about it, because this is when I was in Dubai, and I was shout out to Comic Cave. Best comic book store I've ever been to. Please go check them out. I think they're amazing. That's Comic Ave, like Comic Ave, like one word combined. Amazing collectibles. They have props from the original Iron Man films in their building. It's the best comic book store you've ever seen. Anyway, I was having debates with them, and I just said, like, look, for me, when it comes to any type of media, I like to be surprised, because if I can guess what's going to happen in the story, I'm going to be bored. Like when we watch the videos of us, when we watched Venom, and I was just guessing the whole movie, it made me hate the movie, because I was like, this is you know, cookie cutter crap.
On a side note, I watched Venom 2 whilst doing some shit because I was like, it's on Now TV and I just want to see how bad it is. And it is so bad. I'm sure. It's worse than the first movie.
Really?
It's so painfully bad.
I really did not like the first film. Anyway, so I said, if anything surprises me, it makes me interested. So that's why I, almost to me, Doctor Strange is a bit like Alice in Wonderland in the sense of starts out very normal, cookie cutter, like we're just going through the ropes. But then this character is introduced, America Chavez, who is the rabbit. And bringing
Is this you or is this something you've read?
This is me.
I'm digging this analogy. All right.
Taking him into a completely different world and hopping and seeing all these completely different things. And I mean, Alice in Wonderland itself, it is compared to what an acid trip feels like, where everything's normal and it slowly builds and builds and builds and gets weirder and weirder and weirder and climaxes. And to me, that's what this film is. That's why I think it's, you know, the multiverse of madness, like the madness is emphasis here, because she leads him into this different world. It gets stranger and stranger. Ha ha ha, Dr. Strange, stranger and stranger. To the point where I think it peaks is obviously when he, as a complete Evil Dead ode and fan, possesses a deceased Doctor Strange and becomes a zombie Doctor Strange, fights off demons so hard that they become his cape. Like, I'm sorry, like, you can hate this movie, but that's one of the coolest fucking scenes you'll ever see.
It's pretty metal. Yeah, it's pretty.
It is very metal.
Yeah.
So that's what that film was to me, where I sat there and I was bored, and then things just got more interesting and different and strange and bizarre and weird. And I kind of dug it at the end, where I was like, I was not expecting this. I think they took great risks. Like, do I think it's a great movie? No, not at all. Not at all. Would I ever watch it again? Probably not. But did I enjoy the experience? 100%. Yes, I did.
So I like your analogy a lot. It does make me like their idea a bit more. I think this movie, what it had going for it was the multiverse and the madness. It was in the title. And I felt like I didn't get a lot of multiverse as much as I was hoping for. And I really didn't get a lot of madness, at least from my expectations. Now, there were so many high expectations for this movie. And I actually avoided
the hype. Why?
Because everyone is coming off of No Way Home and the nostalgia of having multiple Spider-Men that you had seen in previous movies and everything tied and villains from those movies. That really had people going.
That's on people, right?
Like, yeah, sure. I'm not saying that like there's a right or wrong here. I'm saying that was where the level of expectation was set. Now, I actually was not on that level, because I only watched one trailer for this movie and I was like, seen enough. I pulled to you. I was like, I don't need to see it. So going into this, I was quite fucking excited. I went with my girlfriend's brother, and on the way, he's a fan. I was like, don't tell me anything about trailers, but like, I'm hyped for this movie because we could potentially have a multiverse version of this, that, and the other, or we could maybe have crossovers. Started building a story on the way there where I was like, what if they do a multiverse where it's the Dark Avengers and it's like the bad guys are the heroes and the heroes are the villains? Or we even didn't get multiple Doctor Strangers that were different people. They were all just Benedict Cumberbatch, where, you know, in Spider-Man No Way Home, you've got different Spider-Men played by different people, which obviously they did that because of the movies. But I felt like the whole trip itself, when the multiverse stuff started kicking off, it was like he went through multiple universes very quickly. And then he stuck around in like two universes the entire film. And they were fucking boring. And I just didn't. I felt like the Illuminati was good. I enjoyed what they did, like bringing the Black Bolt from that TV show that's basically been condemned by Marvel. I thought that was brave, and putting him in the original suit. That was cool. But the whole time I'm watching this movie, I'm like, what does Doctor Strange want? Because he's just running from point A to point B.
He's protecting the multiverse. That's what he wants, to save it. The whole theme of this film is you have to be the guy that holds the knife, right? And he's facing that because he does have to hold the knife, and he comes to terms with it, so much so that he has to possess and break the rules of like the universe in order to be the guy holding the knife. And it proved himself that flaw of his is so bad that there's an alternate version of him, of the guy who holds the knife, that destroys his own universe. Like, It just puts him on blast for who he is, you know?
I mean, that in itself, okay, if that's the whole thing that they're going with, it just wasn't enough for me. I just don't like, they mentioned in passing, they're like, remember when your sister died and that's why like you insist on always being the one that has to be in control? I'm like, oh, did that happen? Because you've never shown us.
I kind of like that, because I liked how he said, we don't talk about that very much, do we? And he says, no, we don't. And for me personally, who doesn't like to talk about certain things, like with losses and stuff like that, actually resonated with me a lot that he was
but
like,
I wanna
by
know.
The way, I had this past tragedy, but I don't want to fucking talk about it. Personally, for me, I like that a lot.
Okay, and personally, I want to know more. Like, that's not enough for me to then understand who he is as a person. Because in the first one, it was so well done, where it was just like, this dude thinks that he's the best surgeon in the world and that, like, he's basically got it all figured out. And turns out he doesn't have it figured out and he doesn't know shit. And then he comes into a point where he can't be the one that, like, puts himself first. He has to put others first and everything else. And that was like the journey for Doctor Strange to the first one. And I really dug that.
Well, his journey really is that he shattered his hand, so he can't be the person he wants to, but he finds a way to get his life back.
Yeah, and become a better
person. I guess so. I don't think he's ever become a better person. And I think it shows in this movie as well that he's still a selfish dude.
I don't feel like it progressed enough for me. And also, where's this universe going now? Like, you know, we've had so many TV shows, we've had a few movies, and they've been fun and standalones are fine, but like the propulsion of this universe is not what it used to be of the Marvel movies coming up and what they're building.
I agree with that 100%.
And I it's kind of like, it's starting to weigh heavy on me where I'm like, I need some sort of like, Where are we going, guys? Like, what are we building to?
You want a theme, don't you?
I want another Thanos, you know what I mean? Or like, where was fucking Kang?
But that's what they say. Kang is supposed to be the thing that's going to tie it all together.
But then get on with it.
Marvel's very good at cleaning up their messes later on. So there is a big mess right now. And we'll see some sort of Secret Wars movie where they'll, you know, brush some stuff under the rug, we'll be like, oh, cool. Well, that makes a lot of
100% sense. 100%. It's going to be Secret Wars, and it's going to be, if they manage to, which, you know, they got all three Spider-Man and all of that. I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to see a big old Secret Wars and we're going to have Downey Jr. as Iron Man. Might even have fucking Tom Cruise as an Iron Man in there.
I don't care about any of them except for Wesley Snipes' Blade. Bring that motherfucker back and make him chop some heads off.
We will probably have the original Fantastic Four. We will probably have, what else have we got in there? We'll have some X-Men for sure. Probably have some Hugh Jackman Wolverine thrown in there.
I still wish the next phase was bringing in the X-Men and then having them sort of have a civil war with the Avengers, X-Men versus Avengers, and then them all just putting their differences
and
aside.
And this could have been the movie to do
I
that.
I haven't finished talking yet. To have them all put their differences aside because the Fantastic Four are telling us that Galactus is coming to eat our universe. Because that's what you need, right? That's what you said. You want Thanos because everyone is like, we need to stop this guy because he's going to wipe out half the universe. How do you peak that? You have a guy that comes and eats universes. Like, that's the thing to fight against. That's why it is a complete zany, wany, wackadoo time period, because Secret Wars is zany, wany, and wackadoo. And I agree. I have a bit of franchise fatigue with Marvel right now. I haven't liked a single show they put out. I haven't liked the past like three or four films. The last film I liked
was Spider-Man. You liked?
Yeah, but I didn't like Shang-Chi. I didn't like Black Widow. I didn't like, what else they done? I don't like Moon Knight. I don't like Loki. I don't like Winter Soldier show. I don't like WandaVision and whatever else there is. I just don't like the cartoon one. The What If?
What If?
Did not like that at all. So I have complete franchise fatigue. Another reason why I went into this film, like, I'm kind of bored of this universe. So surprise me. And they did. They surprised me. So I say,
it's very interesting. More, baby. It's interesting because I came out feeling different, where I was like, I am now fatigued a bit. I'm a bit fatigued to this Marvel stuff where I don't feel like it's moving forward. And I didn't have many surprises in this movie that made me feel like it was worth, you know, seeing on opening day and going to see it in the cinema. Like, could have waited in a way, would have been happy to wait, but we'll see where they go and what they do. Definitely going to be Secret Wars. The other thing I was going to say that I was trying to remember earlier is that if they're going to get Chris Evans back as Captain America for Secret Wars, you're going to have to make him do the Human Torch as well. Like, why wouldn't you? He was the Human Torch in Fantastic Four. That would be so funny.
But who says you need that Fantastic Four?
Well, no, I'm not saying you'd need it, but it would be fun to see. I think it would be a good time to see that and combine it. And it's where all this multiverse stuff, I don't know where it's going, but it would be a cool place.
I saw some good online fan casting for Doctor Doom the other day, where I was like, I would like to see this dude play Doctor Doom. And it was Thomas Shelby from Peaky Blinders. You know, the guy who played Scarecrow in the Dark Knight films?
Cillian Murphy.
Is that his name?
Yes.
I was like, hey, that's a pretty damn good choice.
That's pretty good. His eyes would look good under that mask.
Yes, those piercing blue eyes. And
yeah.
He's pretty menacing as Thomas Shelby, so I think that would be pretty cool.
No, I'm down with that. I think that's a good shout. And also that fucking first cut scene or trailer scene or post-credit scene, there we go, I found the phrase. That first post-credit scene was just like, it just, I don't know, it was felt Spy Kids. It felt total Spy Kids to me, where it was like Charlize Theron shows up and she's just like, Doctor Strange, because you've done this, this has happened. And then he's just like, oh, yeah, that's another thing. At the end of the movie, very Sam Raimi, which I liked at the tail end of the movie, Third Eye pops out and he's just like, ah, and then it cuts. And I was like, all right, cool. There's a struggle now with him having to deal with this third eye. But then the post-credit scene, literally like 2 minutes later, he's just like, all right, Charlize Theron, let's go do it with my third eye.
I agree. I would have cut that scene completely. I agree.
Yeah, and she just tears open like a Spy Kids portal and she's just like, let's go do it.
I don't think the film's good. There's a lot of things that made me laugh in the film. Like when they go to that new world and they're like, oh, look, this is a mirror that basically is an exposition machine, which will tell you stuff about your narrative without us having to really work hard to fit it in the story.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So yeah.
She walked up. She's like, this is what happened to my parents. And he walks up. He's like, and this is what happened to me. Great. Now we know this. Let's move on. Because that would be a public free thing, right? Because what if someone walked by and like, what if your past was like you having a fucking orgy with like, and someone's like, that's my mom in there. Like, why am I seeing an orgy on a public street? You know?
Well, I love how you went sexual with it. Not like someone's committed murder.
Oh, but you could easily be that. Yeah. It'd be crazy. Like a little child watching like Frank Castle's family being murdered. You'd be like, uh-oh, well, this is a public safety like problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I don't like that. And there's one part of the movie crack up laughing. I still don't get why they did it, where Scarlet Witch is just bashing through all those doors and then they stop randomly and wait to see. And she just comes around the corner and goes like, "Wah!"
Yeah. I thought that was quite Sam Raimi Evil Dead. Like,
but it didn't make any sense though.
No, it didn't make any sense.
Also, why you've would they never stop? Seen a single Evil Dead.
Actually, I will have you know, sir, that I have seen not all of them because I fell asleep, but I tried watching some of them recently and I enjoyed the parts that I was awake for, yes.
So what did you try then?
I tried the first one and the second one.
And you fell asleep during both?
Yes. I tried.
The second one is so good.
The second one, but that's more comical, right? Which is what I was trying to say with like her coming around the corner. I felt
first
like
one is a scary movie.
Yeah, first one's way more intense than
and
the
that lady peeks her head up underneath that.
Yeah.
Fucks with me. You know, my big thing is people being possessed and stuff like that. So seeing that face pop up with the red eyes. Ugh,
yeah.
I don't like it. It's my
And then our final bit of news Our final bit of news, and then we will get on to our interview for sure, is that the Spider-Verse 2 film has been moved now from this year to next year, the 2nd of June 2023.
So there's another Spider-Verse movie coming?
They've been developing it for quite some time. They announced it maybe like almost a year ago. They said Spider-Verse 2 coming in 2023.
Oh, sorry, the animation one, right.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a trailer for it, isn't there?
There's been like a teaser trailer, yeah, that kind of like combines some old scenes from the first film with some new stuff. So yes, there's been a trailer and it was all scheduled to come out. And then I don't know why exactly, but it's been moved now an entire year. So we got to wait another year for Spider-Verse 2, which I'm looking forward to. So yeah, I will definitely go and see that when it comes out. But speaking of Spider-Verse, you like that segue?
Sure.
Sure. Well, who are we talking today besides the creator of the Spider-Verse?
Yes.
Mr. John Semper. Let's get into our interview, shall we?
Let's get in. That was awful. Let's do it. Let's go, as all the kids say. Let's go. Let's freaking go. Have you noticed that everyone recently have said, they smack their hands and go, let's go. Let's go. It drives me fucking nuts. I cannot stand it.
Can I get on with this interview, please?
Pay attention to it, because you will hear now, and I'm sure everyone's already aware.
But you don't give me any segue. Like
everybody right now is saying, let's go. Oh. And I hate it.
Oh, the pain.
Let's freaking go. Let's go.
All right, we ready?
Let's go. Yeah. Let's go to the interview. Let's go.
All right, everyone, and welcome. Today we are sitting down with a very special guest for this show. If you're a listener of this podcast and you don't know who he is, then I'll be nice and I'll just fill you in on some of the many things he's done for Spider-Man the Animated Series. First and foremost, we've got the creator of the Spider-Verse with us today, creator of characters like Whistler, which I think is awesome, and a big fan of that and Blade. We've got the creator of the Black Cat Super Soldier storyline, which I consider canon. He introduced us to a roster of lesser-known Spider-Man villains, such as Kingpin, Smythe, Morbius, Hydra Man, The Spot. And we've also got Venom and Carnage there making their first appearances in animation. And then we've also got him introducing us to a world of Marvel Universe characters that he not only introduced, but blended all together, such as the X-Men, Iron Man, Captain America, Fantastic Four, The Punisher, Daredevil, many more. John Semper, welcome to the show.
Oh, my goodness. I'm overwhelmed. Where is this guy?
How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be healthy and well. And I love talking about the show. So,
amazing. Well, that's what we do.
That's exactly what we do. All right. So I suppose our listeners have all been waiting to have you on our show and have been dying to have it. So I want the first question to be something that certainly, hopefully, we'll get some new information out of you, or even just some really cool pieces of information that maybe hasn't been shared around a lot by you. But I'm really curious, though. First question, what is your fondest or some of your fondest memories of working on the show?
All of my fond memories about working on the show have to do with the writers that I hired. When I first started working on the show, I had this idea that I would hire comic book writers, all of the comic book writers who had contributed to the comic book over the years, especially the years when I was reading it. So I hired people like Marv Wolfman, and I hired Jerry Conway. Jerry was my first hire, actually, and he was wonderful. I loved working with Jerry. He was really a great way to start because he took direction well. He was a strong TV writer, and there is a difference between comic book writing and writing for the screen. And Jerry had mastered both. And so that was a great way to start. So I have a great memory of working with Jerry. But Jerry was busy. Jerry was working on Prescription Murder, which was a TV show that starred Dick Van Dyke. And he really kind of didn't have time to do any more writing on the show. And then the first season, I tried a lot of different writers and it just wasn't working out. And I wasn't happy with the flow of the way things were going. So I started hiring my own staff. I was given the go-ahead to hire a staff. And I must say, I felt very good about the selections that I made. And when I did end up with Stan Berkowitz, Mark Hoffmeyer, eventually Jim Krieg, Ernie Altbacker, Meg McLaughlin. She's now Meg Wong. She's married now. That group that I had on staff, I loved working with those guys. And apparently I was a pretty good boss because we're all still good friends. So all of my really fond memories of working on the show are mostly working with that group of staff writers. And then, you know, I mean, it was a kick to just be working on Spider-Man. Spider-Man, I'm not really a huge comic book geek, you know, anymore. When I was younger, I was really, and fortunately, I started reading Spider-Man right from the very beginning. I was a big Spider-Man fan. But when the series came along, I had probably read my last Spider-Man comic in, you know, the early 80s. I think maybe I had stopped reading around 81, 82, because I had come out to LA and I had started my career and I really just didn't have time to read comics, to be honest with you. Bringing the character to life that I had enjoyed as a reader, as a young reader, and, you know, kind of getting caught up with his world and reinterpreting his world for a whole new generation, that always filled me with joy when I went in every day. So I had fond memories of working with the material, fond memories of working with my staff, not so fond memories of the first 13 episodes because they were very difficult.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you had total freedom to choose your partners in the world you want to create then, essentially. There was not any producer that was like, oh, no, I got to get this guy and he's my nephew and, you know, he needs a job.
No, nothing like that.
Right.
In fact, Avi Arad came to me one day and said, hire people. Money is no object. Get people. We were really under the gun. I don't know if you know the story, but I was not the first story editor on the show, and they lost a lot of time working with the first fellow. And by the time I came on, the show was in danger of not getting on the air. So we were, from the moment I arrived, we were under the gun, just completely under the gun. And Avi just came to me and said, hire as many people as you need. We need to get this show going.
That's interesting. So that creates passion, right? If you're working with people that you trust or you admire, that's, I think, to me, creates the best content you can. I know from my personal experiences, if I'm working with people I really like to collaborate with, it creates the best content. So that's really cool to hear.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, the most important thing was that I needed to like them. I needed to enjoy being around them. It was a very difficult working situation in the first year of working on the show. And the real decision that I made was, I don't want to come in, you know, I'm already dealing with a lot of conflict on the top, sort of the people who are over me. I don't want to then deal with a lot of conflict with the people with whom I'm, you know, working and whom I'm in charge of. So I chose really good people. They were just really great guys to be around, and Meg, and they were fun. It was fun. So we had a lot of fun. I think that aspect of things. And then when things calmed down on the top, when they stopped panicking and they left me alone, you know, by the time we got to the end, it was really just pure fun.
What period of time did they leave you alone? Like, when was it that they were like, all right, we're churning out toys, we're making mucho bucks all over the world, and this show is super popular, so let's just leave them to it because they're smashing it. When did that kind of happen?
It's funny because I would not have been able to answer that question, but recently I've been digitizing all of my creative meetings. I recorded every creative meeting, just about every creative
that
meeting.
That could be a podcast in itself, really.
Yeah.
It actually could. Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't have permissions from people, and I doubt that I would get them because some of them are not shown in their best light.
Right.
But
I'm not going to ask who that is, but I can already make assumptions of who you're talking about, and let's just leave that unsaid.
Okay, that's fine. But I've been listening to these tapes and I've been reliving the experience, and my memory had been that by the 13th episode, by Day of the Chameleon, I had started to have a lot more control over the show and they had started to leave me alone. But in point of fact, I'm now hearing that there was still a lot of involvement from the network. And well, there was always involvement from the network until the very, very end. But I had thought that Avi had dropped out somewhere around season two. And I'm now finding that he was still kind of checking in and meeting with me pretty much through the whole thing until maybe the last 13. But what happened was, when I arrived, how can I put this? When I sort of arrived when the confidence in writer people was low, okay? I think that the burn from having dealt with the first guy, and for whatever reason, you know, I don't know really anything about what his experience was, and he's a very credible writer, but they were feeling very burned by the time I came on. And so I came on in an environment of zero trust. They did not trust me. Avi didn't know me at all. Stan was the one who brought me in, Stan Lee. But, you know, Stan was odd. I'd known Stan for a decade, and Stan was a good friend, and I still love him to death. But I think that he was under a lot of pressure. Oh, sorry about that. I think he was under a lot of pressure, and in some ways, he was really just as hard on me as everyone else was, because I think his reputation, having brought me in, his reputation was somewhat on the line. And I did not have a very good working relationship with Bob Richardson. And so I was mostly just walking into a very hostile headwind, pretty much every day. And it's funny listening to these tapes, because when I realized, you know, I had come from another show that was the total opposite. You know, it was all very friendly and nice. And Stan had called me and said, could you please come onto this show because we're in trouble? And so I left that show and I came onto Spider-Man thinking that I would be somewhat supported and appreciated. And in fact, there was very little support and almost a total lack of appreciation.
When did that change for you then? When did that kind of, because there must have been, as you said, you got to choose your own writers and then obviously you're still friends to this day. So there must have been a lot of admiration and a lot of group support there for you during the show. And I'm sure they wouldn't have let you go to season five if they didn't, you know, believe in what you're doing. If they didn't like you, I'm sure that would that would have kind of overrun that.
Let me tell you how Hollywood works, or certainly how the industry works.
Okay.
After the first person got fired, they were not going to commit to me for the full 65. So my contract was for the first 13. In other words, they didn't want to get stuck. If I didn't work out, they didn't want to get stuck having to pay off another writer for a huge sum of money. So I only had a contract for the first 13. By about episode 4 or 5, they were pretty much convinced they were going to fire me.
Wow.
Yes. I was, in fact, fired. And what happened was that... I did a little bit of behind the scenes manipulation, and I let the network know that that Avi wanted to fire me. Avi and Bob pretty much wanted me gone. And mostly Bob wanted me gone. And I think he was kind of whispering in Avi's ear, but they were pretty much in agreement. They wanted me gone and they were quite pleased to have fired me. But the problem was I had friends in the building.
This is like some sort of Godfather story or something. Yeah. Like you got connections.
It's very weird. Stan's secretary, Pam Duvall, bless her heart, called me up and said, do you know what's going on right now? And I said, no, what? And she said, they're having a secret meeting with your replacement. So I knew I knew that I was being fired before they, you know, sprung it on me. And so I let the network know that I was being fired. And the network did not like the fact that they, A, that they were firing me because the network had approved me, and B, that the network had not been involved in whatever was going on.
Right.
So basically my hero was Margaret Lesh, who just called up Avi and said, no, you cannot fire John Semper.
Wow.
And that's how I ended up not being fired. Now, we still had another deadline coming up, which was at the end of the 13. There had to be a determination as to whether or not I would be signed on for the remaining episodes for the rest of the 65. And by some miracle, by the time we got to the 13th, Avi was sort of okay with me. He had turned around a little bit. And I think he was sort of feeling like other people had led him astray.
Right.
So, and I won't go into that in great detail, but I was no longer the bad guy. I think he had figured out that I was not the bad guy.
So people were pinning things on you and making you out to be what, the scapegoat for any potential problems, that to Avi, and then he thought that you were the reason why certain things weren't working, or is that what the case then?
Well, see, here's the problem in animation. In animation, you don't see anything for like the entire first 13 episodes
that
you're doing. All you have are the scripts, and all you have are the voice tracks. And you don't have any ratings. You don't have anything on the air. You don't have anything. So if somebody says these scripts are garbage, then there's no counter to that.
Mm.
So if you've got somebody who you've placed a lot of trust in, and they're saying this isn't going to work, these scripts aren't working, this is horrible, this blah 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 blah, someone like Avi, who at that particular stage didn't really know what he was doing, only because he was inexperienced, didn't have anything to do with a lack of intelligence or talent or anything like that. But he just, this whole animation beast was brand new to him. If you got somebody whispering in your ear and saying, well, these scripts aren't going to work, that becomes the gospel. And I think there was a lot of that. I think by the time we got to the 13th, he was beginning to understand that that was not necessarily the case. And he was, it was just a weird, it was almost like literally that week was the week that he had come to that awareness.
Wow.
And we had a little bit of a conversation where he said, John, we got off to a kind of a rocky start, but, I like where we are now and blah, 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 blah. I was signed on for the remainder.
So was there some sort of potentially something that he could see, like a daily or something like that, where he finally saw something that said, this is good to me?
No, really? No. Yeah, it was really, this is why it's so tricky in animation, because for a good portion of the time, you're just operating on faith. I think it's different now because the technology allows for you to get results much faster.
Mm-hmm.
But back in those days, 9 months was a short schedule. So from the moment you finished a script, you didn't see animation for 9 months.
Wow.
And maybe in a hurry 6 months, but then you'd get garbage back. So it was really, you'd go a long time and really there wasn't any way to tell. But I think he had started to trust me more. He realized that I was, a good soldier doing my job. So that's kind of what happened.
Okay, cool. And so you were speaking about animation, and that brought a question to mind, which is, the look and feel of the show. I've seen early character designs, which are awesome. And I know, obviously, Stan's involvement was there as well. And there was a lot of Ditko feel to it that kind of was then, I suppose, reshuffled into a 90s feel, which I have to say is, to me, is like your Peter Parker is my definitive Peter Parker. Same.
Yeah, yeah, like to me, it's always been, what if John Romita Jr. and John Romita Sr. worked on the same thing? Like, it's the blend of both those artists. And mm-hmm. even to the point where when I worked on Spider-Man, I snuck in every single time I worked on the character, if he was Peter Parker, I'd have him in the classic outfit, no matter what. And I'd always say to the colorist, like, make sure it's these colors, like, when you do it. Even in Spider-Ham, little Spider-Ham, Porker Parker has, like, the animated series outfit on.
That's great. That's wonderful.
And so that leads me to, you know, and there's also, just briefly, another thing I want to say is how Spider-Man looks at night, especially in the shadows. And it's unlike any other animation I've seen, you know. I know at the time, obviously, Batman and the animated series was big as well and had their own definitive look and feel. And your show did too. So as a showrunner, like, what input did you have there? And what things did you have that were from you that you were like, I'm glad that's in there because that's, you know, my added piece to my Spider-Man?
I give all credit for the look and the feel of the show, the visual look and feel of the show, to Bob Richardson. Bob is a brilliant producer and he did a brilliant job. And because we did not get along, he didn't have any input really into my stories. And I didn't really seek out or try to have any input into what he did visually. So I give Bob all the credit, really. Bob's a brilliant technician. And he did a wonderful job. You know, when we would get the shows in finally, and they would be put together, we would all watch them, all of us in the crew, we would watch them in, we were in the New World Building at that time, and the New World Building had a screening room with a big giant movie screen. And so every episode, while we were in the New World Building, we watched in a movie theater on a big screen.
Wow, cool.
I got to tell you, you know, and this was an era before there were any Spider-Man movies. So watching our episodes on the big screen, they held up so well. And they really were, for the most part, movie quality. When you look at Night of the Lizard on a big screen, or you look at Venom 1 on a big screen, it's really, you know, it's movie quality animation. And Bob did a great job. He chose really great artists. He put together a really great staff of people, some of whom I'm still friends with. So he gets all the credit. The only thing that I did visually, because, you know, everything begins with a script. And so if you indicate that you want something to happen, you get it. And there were things that I had remembered about the world of Spider-Man that had been lost over the years, like his spider light, the one that he had in his belt.
Yes, love that. Okay.
I absolutely, absolutely knew when I got the show that I was going to somehow bring that light back.
Which I did. It's an episode one, isn't it?
The very first episode. Yeah. I was just going to say that. So, you know, calling for things like that, there were certain things that I would call for that I had always wanted to see. And so that would be my only input. But no, Bob gets all the credit for the look and feel of the show.
Okay, great. My next question for you is, out of all of the episodes, and I'm not asking you to pick your favorite one, but obviously there are so many storylines that are interwoven with the comics that you said that you read. And what are some of your, just, it doesn't even have to be from the show, but in general, what are some of your favorite Spider-Man storylines, whether they're in the show or not?
All of them, honestly. You know, the thing that I told my writers and the thing that I always wanted to do was, I said, let's surprise the audience with every episode. So, you know, Stan had come to me very early on and he said, I want to do a thing called the Spider-Man Diaries. And every week, Spider-Man will fight a different villain and he'll say, I'll never forget the time I fought the Green Goblin and blah, 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 blah. And I said to Stan, no, it's not going to work, because by the very fact that he's narrating the story, you already know that he gets out of it just fine. Number one. Number two, I don't want to do the villain of the week. I don't want to do. So, and he fought me on that. I mean, you know, I'm listening to these tapes now and he's really pissed off at me a lot of the time.
Wow.
And one of the things, and you know, you have to remember the backdrop is I had known Stan for a decade by that point and we were friends. So I didn't regard him as a boss. I regarded him as a collaborator with whom I frequently disagreed. And I think he regarded me the same way. One thing, for instance, that I totally forgotten about was he absolutely wanted Peter Parker to have a cat. And really? He kept really being pissed off at me that I had not put the cat in the show. And I might have done it.
Felicia or something?
No, I mean a pet cat. He wanted there to be a pet cat. And I refused to do it because I thought, well, that's a dumb Saturday morning thing. So, I think there might have been a cat in one episode. No, he was really, really pretty angry with me.
I'm wondering if, because if memory serves me right, the show Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends that was on in the 80s, mm-hmm. I believe, oh no, it was a little dog. Sorry. I thought there was a cat, yeah. But it was like a little dog looked like Blofeld's cat.
But to me, it sounds like if he wanted to do the diaries of him reminiscing about like times he fought Spider-Man, that to me sounds like Stan's reminiscing about the time he was writing Spider-Man back in the 60s. And maybe Stan just got a new cat that he loved. He's like, you know what? Peter should have a cat.
No, he had a very good reason for both. I mean, the first was that he was looking, you know, he was trying to figure out a format that would be easy for kids to digest. Then the second was that he just thought it would be a fun thing for Peter to have someone to talk to. You know, I did it with Bruce the Gargoyle.
Yes.
Which to me was much more interesting.
I love Bruce.
Visually exciting. But that was really what he was doing. You know, the thing is that Stan is a great storyteller. And so all of his suggestions were geared toward telling a great story and making an entertaining show. And again, when you're operating in the dark and you don't know how things are going to go, you have to remember, we were doing this before there were Spider-Man movies. They're really, you know, this whole idea of how to take this character and translate him to the screen in the best possible way, we were totally in the dark. So you really have to make choices, and you have to believe in your choices, and you have to fight for your choices. And that's kind of what happened. So to answer your question, I told my writers, let's surprise the audience with every episode so they will never know what they're going to get. So you could tune in one week and, you know, there might be the death of Mary Jane. You could tune in one week and there might be, Smythe turning into the super spider slayer. I mean, my mandate was let's always do the unexpected. So when I watch the series, and there are episodes I still haven't seen in 25 years, because I, believe it or not, I don't sit around watching my old work. but every once in a while I do come across an episode and I enjoy it because it surprises me. Chris Cooper, who played Norman Osborn in the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies, he's a friend of mine. And when he got the role, we spoke on the phone and he wanted to get up and running with the character. And I said, well, let me figure out what episodes there are that feature, you know, the Norman Osborn character prominently. And I found one episode where, I think it was the one where Harry takes over the mantle of the Green Goblin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Norman is sort of this ghostly figure talking to him either through his mind or from another dimension. And I was really surprised at how good that episode was.
Honestly, man. So we've interviewed both Gary and Neil, and they are both the definitive Norman Osborn and Harry Osborn. They are incredible. And both of our interviews, when we interviewed them, they lent their voice talent to us. And it was just like, they haven't lost it. You know, it's just brilliant. No,
they're brilliant. They're brilliant performers. Yeah. And I'm watching the episode and I had really forgotten what we had put in it. If you had asked me that question before I had seen the episode, I would not have thought of that episode as being one of the better ones. But I'm watching it and it was gripping. And Bob had done a really excellent job in the animation on that episode. And we had gotten a good result from overseas. So it, you know, didn't have any choppy editing or any kind of futzing or anything like that. Just a really good, solid episode. And it's not even one of my favorites. If I were to think of my favorites off the top of my head, The Day of the Chameleon, which I wrote.
That's your baby, isn't it?
Oh, man, it was like a hot knife through butter. It was just so, the plot points just came to me and it went through with very minimal notes. And I got nominated for an Annie Award for that script. Oh, wow. So that was a really special one. And that was also right at the end of a lot of the troubles I'd been having where I did get re-signed. And so, you know, that and the beginning of the second season, I can kind of feel the newly acquired freedom that I had And so those are episodes that are special. The last couple of episodes where I, you know, essentially created the Spider-Verse, those were really wonderful episodes, and I like them. Yeah.
Okay, so you just mentioned the Spider-Verse, mm-hmm. and obviously that is what everyone is talking about right now and chucking into every single Marvel property that's going right now, starting, you know, with Spider-Man No Way Home. And now we've got Multiverse of Madness, and they're really expanding into multiple characters. Where did that come from, John? In your, you know, where did that come from where you're like, I want to do an episode where there's multiple Spider-Men that team up? How did that happen?
Well, the bottom line about this job is that what you're hired to do is think up cool stuff. That's what you're hired to do. And again, this idea of always surprising the audience, you know, I mean, this is what I do for a living, is I sit down and I think, what haven't I seen? What would, just in terms of pacing of the entire series, where would be a big place to go for the grand finale? I had created this thing where Madam Web, a character that nobody wanted me to use. So I'm very amused that they're now making a movie out of her.
Because it's crazy that Sony's making every character possible. Yeah. Morbius as well. It's just nuts.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Because, you know, as I famously said, you know, the exchange I had with Avi, when I said I want to use Madam Web, and he said, well, I can't make a toy out of a effing old broad. So that was kind of his attitude toward it. And I always point
Both me and my brother said, like, we would add a Madam Web toy. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did get a Madam Web toy. She's on the wall up there somewhere.
Oh, really?
Amazing.
Yeah, they did make her into a toy. That's one of my great achievements. I don't see her right at the moment, but she's around. Oh, there she is.
I love how at the beginning of this episode, I listed all of your achievements. And you're like, one of my great achievements is I made a Madam Web toy.
Made them make a Madam Web toy. Let me see if I can get her up.
Oh, no, don't break anything.
That's okay. There she is right there. That's.
Do you remember that? So I remember seeing that once or twice.
That does look familiar.
Yeah, right? And she doesn't have feet, right? She's got this like little wispy cloak thing instead.
Yes. Yes.
Did we have that? Yeah. I think we actually may have had that.
I think we had that, bud.
I think it turns out we said we did want a Madam Web toy, and we have one.
Yeah. I always thought she was cool because I've always loved time travel movies and like multiverse stuff anyway. So she was the gateway to that. So I always thought she was a great character. And Joan Lee, late Joan Lee. So yeah. Amazing.
And that was my decision, was to approach Joan. I wanted to cast Joan. I had a lot of influence on the casting. For instance, as I pointed out in other interviews, I'm a big Star Trek fan, so I would frequently suggest that we use Star Trek people as voices, and we ended up using just about everybody except Shatner and Nimoy.
Did you ever approach any of them?
No, we never did because we knew that wasn't going to happen. The person.
Just a quick fan casting: who would you want Shatner to be in Spider-Man: The Animated Series?
Oh, you know, I can never do that because the way it would work would be, I would think, what role can I put Majel Roddenberry in? Or what role can I put, I want to work with, you know, George Takei at some point. Who would he be? And then I would think, well, let's do Doctor Strange and let's, you know, let's have him, you know, portray Wong. Wong. And with Majel, I really almost made the Anna Watson character bigger than she was in the comics, simply because I wanted to work with Majel Roddenberry. So sometimes the casting, another good one is John Philip Law. I had gone to a nostalgia convention, and long story short, I had met John Philip Law, and I had always... He had done a movie many, many, many years ago in the 60s that I had loved called Danger Diabolic, which was one of the first comic book movies I ever saw in life. It was directed by Mario Bava. It was made in Europe, and it never really got released in this country. But I happened to see a screening of it in Boston when I was younger, and I never forgot the film. And Diabolic is a very big comic book character in Europe. totally unknown in America, or mostly unknown in America. And I loved that movie, and I loved John Philip Law in it. And of course, he was Sinbad, and he was all these other great characters, Pygar in Barbarella. So when I met him, I thought, I want to do something with John Philip Law. What can I do? And that, in a way, inspired the whole Felicia Hardy and the dad and the cat and the whole thing, because I thought, well, that'd be a perfect role for John Philip. And I wanted to give him something that would be slightly recurring, you know, more than one episode.
I mean, you made the Black Cat like a lineage, like Zorro almost, you know, like it's being passed down. And I love that so much. That's so cool. Instead of just being one singular character, but it's been this chain of cat burglars that started with Felicia's dad and then passed to her, and bringing in Marvel lore with Captain America, man. I mean, hats off, like that. My brother and I, still, when we found out that she wasn't like that in the comics, we're like, wait, that's wrong. Because
it's canon to me. I mean, it's one of my earliest memories as a kid of a storyline sticking with me. But when I found out, like, I was like, wait, they want him because he has a photographic memory, so he knows the formula just by looking at it. And as a young child, that to me was like, oh, wow. Like, it made me, like, I was like, that's cool. Like, not just the look at Spider-Man punching a villain. Like, it was like a more deeper, like, oh, I actually think I like storytelling, you know?
Well, see, thank you so much, because that's the word that I like. I would always say this, let's go deep. Let's make things resonate instead of just another punch or another explosion. Let's really take things, you know, several layers below the surface. I'm a big believer in the fact that the people that we are a direct reflection upon the people from whom we came, the people who raised us. So that family connection, whether it's good or bad, is a very important one. And I guess it does run through my series because I you know, because of my own feelings about it. So to get back to the Spider-Verse.
Oh yeah, that's where we started on that question, sorry.
That's okay. No, I always do this because there are so many different tributaries that we can take.
There's so many things I want to ask you as well. I think that's where, so yeah, it's probably me as well. Back to the Spider-Verse.
That's okay. But to get back to the Spider-Verse, so I brought in Madame Web, and I had this idea that she would be training Spider-Man. Now, at the time, all I knew when I started that was that it was going to be something really big. I hadn't quite figured it out yet, but the way it works with me as a creator is that I sort of percolate, you know, sort of ideas over a period of time. I mean, it generally does come from nothing. It comes from asking myself questions, thinking about what the parameters are that I want to work in. The parameter here was it had to be big. Because we had done so much, you know, by the time you get to the end of 65, A, you're exhausted, but B, if you don't give a really big ending that's memorable, it kind of negates all of everything that you saw beforehand. And I wanted to have the biggest possible ending I could think of. And then slowly I began to realize, well, what if he saves all of reality? So it's not just the city, it's not just Earth, it's all of reality. So that's the first thought, the first ingredient. The second ingredient was, Avi made all these really dumb Spider-Man toys that were characters that didn't exist in the show.
That we bought, man. We bought them.
You guys bought them. And I was thinking about you guys. When I was a kid, if you bought a Huckleberry Hound toy, you know, if you watched the Hanna-Barbera show and then you bought the toy, and if Huckleberry Hound was red instead of blue, you felt cheated. It was sort of like, well, couldn't they have figured out that he was blue and not red? And that always bothered me. Just as a kid, that always bothered me when the makers of the toy didn't pay attention to the very show that they were making the toy for. And so, he had made an armored Spider-Man toy, and we never had armored Spider-Man in the show. And at that time, I didn't even really know that there had been an armored Spider-Man in the comic. Mm-hmm. I just knew that there was a toy that existed. There were several toys that existed. Octo Spider-Man was another one. You know, we didn't have...
We had that one.
Yeah, we didn't have Octo Spider-Man in the show. And that, so that really bothered me. It really, you know, I thought, I don't want kids to feel cheated. I don't want kids to watch my show and feel like I cheated them. So I was looking for some scenario where I could bring Armored Spider-Man and Octo Spider-Man and some of these others into it. But I didn't have much time left. You know, I mean, you could do a whole arc on an Octo Spider-Man. You could do a whole arc on Armored Spider-Man. I didn't have any time left. And I thought, okay, now the concept of parallel worlds is not new. There had been a TV show called Sliders where people, you know, this same group of characters kept sliding into the same city, but in different dimensions. So, you know, I don't take any credit for coming up with parallel dimensions. I do take credit for coming up with parallel dimensions with regard to Spider-Man, coming up with multiple Spider-Men, because there had not been any such thing in the comics prior to me doing those episodes. And so really what I had was, so it was a melding of all the things that we had created. We had created the transporter, the dimensional transporter. I created that as my metaphor for death, and we did it with the Spot. And so it had already...
And Green Goblin, right?
And same Green thing. Goblin, exactly.
Yeah.
Again, using it as the metaphor for death. So I already had that. I had a bunch of Spider-Men that I wanted to get involved, you know, before the show ended. And I had something big and the end of reality and Madam Web training Spider-Man. And it all kind of came together. You know, it was sort of like, okay, well, there are going to be all these multiple Spider-Men. Then the minute you go, there are going to be multiple Spider-Men and, you know, someone's going to create a bomb that's going to destroy all of reality. And so that was my idea. And they'll use the dimensional portal technology to open up a portal to all of reality, all of the different realities. That was my idea.
Sounding a lot like Spider-Man No Way Home to me.
Well, you can imagine my surprise when I'm sitting there watching that movie and I'm realizing, oh, they're doing my story.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like that. I went to see this movie that everyone said was really great. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching it and I'm going, oh, now wait a minute.
You know? And you know, that's such like, so I obviously, as a fan, I love the film. And I know, you know, the source of the Spider-Verse comes from you and your show. I can know those things and be excited at what I'm watching and also sad because I know a lot of creators. There's been a few creators I've listened to on other podcasts recently. One in particular, I can't remember his name now, but he created the Winter Soldier.
Ed Brubaker, right? Is that his name?
Thank you. Yeah, that is his name. And Brubaker gets no credit for anything that is on screen. And not only was Winter Soldier a major character in multiple Marvel films, but he had his own freaking TV show, Disney Plus.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it really is unfortunate and frustrating because I know you're not asking for a lot. You're not asking to be constantly praised for it, but just some friggin' appreciation on the screen at the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So well, I understand.
I think right now, John, you're Bill Finger, right? And I hope that you do get your just desserts of credentials eventually, but much like Bill Finger with Batman, it took a long time for people to realize, yes, this person had a lot to do with the creation of this particular thing.
Yeah.
So hopefully it will happen one day. I can't see why it wouldn't. Well, just needs more exposure, right?
Yeah. You know, I'm not really that big on self-promotion. So, you know, I suppose I could have gone running around and made a little video that could have gone viral or something. Honestly, I'm a little embarrassed sometimes. All I would have liked, there's a moment when the character on screen is going through his address book on his phone. And as a joke, they put in the names of, you know, famous artists, like my friend Dennis Cowan is in there and stuff. Even that would have been cool, you know, just to have seen my name up on screen. And I will say this, the thing I love about Warner's DC, if I may tout my most recent employers, is that when they do anything, they will have a credit roll of anyone who has ever touched the character, you know, whether it's back in the day or currently. If you've had anything to do with a character in a big way, they'll get your name back there and a thank you. You know, that's really all I would have wanted.
That's good news, Will.
Yeah, so I've been working for Marvel for like 6 or 7 years, and I've recently made the jump to DC. So it's everything sound promising right now.
Yeah, no, listen, DC are the ones who have sporadically employed me over the last 25 years, you know, because after Spider-Man, I was not brought back to do a superhero show until Static Shock, for which I was nominated for an Emmy, which was great. It was a wonderful experience, 2 seasons. I did 13 issues of Cyborg for DC, which was great. Yeah. Wonderful work. And then, you know, now I've got this Green Lantern movie coming out. There's something else in the middle there, too, that I did for DC that I can't think of at the moment. But no, they've been great. I mean, they've, you know, DC has treated me really well. Marvel acts like I don't exist. And it's just
a shame.
It's so weird. It's very weird. The reason I'm not Bill Finger is that I do. Fortunately, I've had a good long career. I've done a lot of things. I do get recognized for the things that I've done. My career is not over. I'm still working. And then cool guys like you guys, they know the truth and they spread the word. And so, whereas, you know, I read Batman for many years, I never knew who Bill Finger was. I think that there are a lot of people out there who do know about my show. I love the fact that Hasbro is still making toys based on my show.
Yeah, man, the new line is, but then the new line is weird, yeah, because
it is.
We're big toy, I was going to say toy boys, but that sounds really weird. We're big toy fans, both me and my brother. Like I said, the wall that you got behind you, we had both of those toys, and we were very fortunate. And the new line got me excited because it's the same placard or cardboard back that would be on those toys you have there.
Yeah.
But then the figures itself, like the Mary Jane is not the Mary Jane. Or you know, she's not dressed or Kingpin. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very strange. Well, and also the interchangeable heads, the Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy interchangeable heads is very.
That's peculiar. What does that say about what they feel about those characters? Like, oh yeah, just change their head. And yeah, it's that's the same. True. That's bad. Yeah, I don't get that because that would be like, oh, these Batman animated series figures are coming out, and then it's like the cartoon from the Justice League in the '70s. Yeah. It would be weird.
Yeah.
Or like Christian Bale, even a more modern version, it would just be it would be weird.
I think it's very peculiar with my series because you know my series has sort of been disowned. Disney sort of doesn't want to own it, and Sony doesn't own it, and it's kind of in limbo. And yet, it was the gateway drug for a whole generation of men and women who were introduced to Spider-Man via specifically my series.
You introduced millions of people to Spider-Man, dude, like including us two and millions more. From this podcast, the amount of listeners that we've gathered over the years that are all because they're fans of the show and feel the same way we do. It's amazing.
Yeah. And people treat it as a definitive canon. Like when they think of just the lore of Spider-Man, they think of Spider-Man the Animated Series.
All right, and that was part one of our interview with John Semper. We do hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. We have part two coming in our next episode. So to close out this jam-packed episode full of news and interviews, we usually finish with our little segment, What You're Doing With Your Life. Buddy, give me a little theme tune for What You're Doing With Your Life.
What you're doing with your life.
I like it. What have you been watching and reading and listening to?
I've been watching golf because I'm a boring white man. There's the PGA Championship this week, so everyone's playing. Just Tiger Woods has just teed off, I believe. Yep, 40 minutes ago. So when we're done, I'll watch that. It was my birthday, Schmeid.
It was.
My wife got me a draft beer keg, like home pulled pint machine, and we've been taking nips off of that and having a grand old time.
Nips like granddad before bed, just one little nip
and I had a nice time on my birthday, and yeah, I've just kind of been hanging out because I've been in between projects and
yeah, I went to Dubai on a business trip to the Comic Cave and did some signings, which was amazing. And that's where I saw Doctor Strange. I made some new business contacts out there and some exciting opportunities, which I'm looking forward to. And it's getting hot. I've got a sweat on my brow, bud, and sweat in my pants, and I don't like it.
It is getting hot. I know when it's getting hot when I'm just like doing stuff around the kitchen, especially for like with the YouTube channel. Again, at Chef Alex Robson, if anybody wanted to check out my cooking show on YouTube. And today, just setting up the lights and like the camera and just the entire kitchen setup that I have for the episodes, I was like, I'm sweating, and all I've done is just like set the stuff up.
I really regret buying a crushed velvet desk chair. This was a really bad decision. Because as fancy as my chair looks, it's very pretty, crushed velvet. Oh, it's very nice, very in. It is a swamp down there, and I don't like it.
As in, what is that college humor of Batman where he's like, really seals in the flavor?
My arse is Dagobah, population Yoda.
That was good. I like that. Oh, speaking of Star Wars, we got fucking Kenobi coming, and you're not as pumped as I am.
I think it's going to be bad.
I think you're wrong. I've seen some cool interviews with the cast. I'm pumped to see Vader come back, and I'm pumped to see Obi-Wan come back. So
I just don't.
That's enough for me.
The Inquisitor side of the universe, I really think, is silly. I think it completely shits all over. There's only two, Master and Apprentice, no more.
But they've had Inquisitors for a while in the cartoons.
Yes,
stuff.
And I haven't liked it at all.
Okay.
I just don't think that. I think it's kind of rude to what the whole story is. I mean, they kind of shot themselves in the foot by making those rules anyway. But yeah, I don't know. I saw the trailer. Didn't do anything. But look, please prove me wrong.
Yeah.
But as I said, my favorite stuff is when they do things I don't expect. And Kenobi looks pretty much like I know what's going to happen in that. He's going to live, right?
Yeah, and so is Vader. I get it.
I still have a problem that it's fucking, he's like, I must cover up my name so no one must find me. So I will be old Ben Kenobi still. I mean, I want to keep that, but no one will guess that O.B.Kenobi, old Ben. Oh, shit. I feel like on his first day, he's like, all right, I can't let anybody know. Like, what's your name? Obi-Wan Kenobi, old Ben Kenobi. Fuck.
He just like looks around the room. He sees an old guy. He's like, old. Then he sees a name tag that says Ben. He's like, Ben.
And then the mirror, Kenobi.
Oh, shit.
I've seen memes of like someone on the Death Star telling Vader, like, we found an old Ben Kenobi on Tatooine. And he's like, he wouldn't be that fucking stupid to do that. Like, right? Like, that's dumb. Let's just move
on. Especially the planet where he came from.
Yeah. He's like, that sounds really dumb.
Oh, fucking hell. That's amazing. Oh, man. What I'm doing with my life, besides the YouTube cooking channel, is obviously working and twerking, doing Penny's Pizza, which has been always good fun. But yeah, trying to do something with the YouTube as well, which has been great. Other from that, I saw all of Moon Knight. I know you said you weren't a fan. I'm not sure you even watched it past like a certain episode, right?
Episode and a half.
Yeah, and that was enough for you, which is fair. You didn't like it. I say it was okay. It was decent. The two things I loved was episode 5, which is the second to last episode. Probably the best episode that Marvel has ever done, if on any program that they've had, possibly one of the best Marvel things I've seen. I just really liked the pacing of it, the storytelling, and Oscar Isaac's performance I thought was fantastic. He was playing two different people, and honestly, I caught myself being like, oh, that's right, he's the same person in real life. Like, I was sold. So I really enjoyed that. My girlfriend, who doesn't really watch Marvel stuff, watched it with me, and she was into it. So that was really nice, where it's like, yeah, let's watch Moon Knight together. So that was really cool. And asking questions, and I was trying not to be like, I couldn't really nerd out on Moon Knight because I don't know much about the character. So I think that's why she kind of enjoyed it, because I wasn't like, that is this character and he was in this movie and he did this.
Issue 46 is when he got his penis out, and that's my favorite comic book of all time.
Moon Knight, obviously Doctor Strange 2, Venom 2, I was saying before at the beginning of this episode.
Venom.
It was so, so bad. Other from that, I've not really watched. I tried watching the Evil Dead movies and I fell asleep. I tried watching those before Doctor Strange.
Wait, I kind of want to smack you for saying that. On the shoulder.
I've got to see the, according to John Semper, I think this may be in our part two, but I've got to see the OG Fly.
Why don't you save that for Halloween and do a double feature of the OG Fly and also the other Vincent Price original that I really like is, what's it called? Last Man on Earth.
Oh, I haven't seen that either.
Which is, you know, the Will Smith tried to do the I Am Legend?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the films. Yeah, that was the remake of it. But the original is so good.
Okay, I'll definitely check that out. There's also some films.
Vincent Price double feature.
There's also some films I've been told to check out. There's one that's actually a multiverse related film. Not Marvel, but it's to do with the multiverse, called Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Yeah, I think and I remember that.
It's supposed to be fantastic. And I think it just came out in cinemas here in the UK. I think it's been out in the US for a while.
Everything and Everywhere. Na, 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 na.
What are you singing?
It's from Andrew Garfield's Click Click Boom.
Oh, I don't remember that movie.
And everyone and everywhere. Da, 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 da,
da. You're talking to the wrong person here. You talk to my girlfriend, she'll be like, oh yeah, I know all the words.
She'd know, yeah.
I saw it once and I enjoyed it, but it's gone from my brain.
I have one song stuck in my head from that fucking film.
You don't even know the words.
No, because it's like, I said you would say that. I would say and you said you would say that. I was saying that we said that.
Okay. All right.
Sorry,
I think
listeners.
I know. I think we've been rambling long enough. This episode.
Welcome back to the podcast.
We've lost our touch. If John Semper wasn't on this episode, no one would be listening.
I hope he actually doesn't listen to all this waffle in between. He's like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Why did I talk to those guys? I'll never come back. Oh shit.
Right. Get him once and move on. Am I right? I feel like a lot of guests might listen to us being like, what the fuck are they talking? Like, why are they talking about Kingpin turning into a giant pigeon? Like, what is going on?
That's really good. I like that scenario. That was fun.
Kingpin.
So as you said, you like when things are unexpected, and I liked it because that was so unexpected. I didn't see that shit coming at all.
Yes, the Kingpin.
Oh man. All right. Well. That's all the time we've got for this week. Join us next time where we'll continue talking all things Spider-Man, the animated series. We'll be back with our part two of John Semper, hopefully with a little tighter routine than the waffle that we've been doing in this episode. So I've been Alex Robson.
I've been Will Robson.
And remember, with a great podcast comes great recordability. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Spider-Man, 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 Spider-Man.